When Black women get together, we talk about our healing, right? We talk about the things that are going on in our life. And those women who are surrounding you are uplifting you. They're empowering you, right? And then the healing comes in. And then you can walk away feeling resilient.
Hey there, world. You're listening to The Hectic Podcast with Daryl Kelly and me, Michelle Lee. And things are a little bit different this week. Daryl has been traveling, and I'm not 100% convinced that he did not record this episode with us in a mailing shipping box somewhere. To see what I mean, jump on our YouTube channel. You can see what it looked like for Daryl to record, but he did not want to miss out on this incredible conversation. Last week, we chatted with Terry Lomax, and this week, we got to talk with her podcast partner, Dr. Dom. Dr. Dominique Broussard is her full name, and just an absolutely incredible conversation with her around the podcast that she and Terry have created, and also around ourselves and the way that we talk to ourselves, the way that we create space for ourselves, and how when we do that, we also get the opportunity to do that for other people. I'm so excited to get to chat with Dr. Dom, and I get to do the intro asking, always asking question, what do you do and who are you?
Okay, so, well, I am Dr. Dominique Broussard. I go by Dom or Dr. Dom, and I, answering that question, who am I? I'm an auntie. I am a sister. I'm a daughter. I'm a granddaughter. I'm a niece. I'm a friend. I'm a bestie. I'm all those things. Yeah. I'm also unapologetically Black. I am a
I got to stop you there. What does unapologetically Black mean? Because I love that. I love when we're not apologizing for our identity and who we are. But like, what does unapologetically Black mean? And then keep going, because I think that's just really important to give some qualities to what that means. Because I love it. It's incredible.
That means that I own all of who I am as a Black woman, and anything that comes with that. I am intentional about any code switching that might happen. I try my best to show up as my fullest self, even if that might make other people uncomfortable. So that's what it means to me. I know that it means different things to other people, but to me, it's really about being able to show up as my full self in spaces.
I love that. I love what you say about showing up as yourself, even though it may make other people uncomfortable, because, you know, I think that that's something that we're so good. We become so conditioned to impression management, and we give a little bit of our identity up as we do that. And I think anyone that's listening to this, I mean, if you're listening to the Hectic Podcast, you're very aligned with our beliefs. But if you're listening to this, I'm sure you've seen this through your life where you kind of give a little bit here, a little bit here, a little bit here, a little bit here. And then you're like, well, who am I? And then you're in this identity crisis or imposter syndrome happens. And I think it's so important. The language that you said is, this is my space. I own this space, and this is who I am. And I'm not going to apologize for who I am, because who I am is, I'm assuming you're great. You're great. Who I am is great and excellent. And it's actually funny, the parallels for between this, because Michelle and I were just talking about this concept and what she's doing for her daughters for also not apologizing for their space and who they are.
It's so important. That's so beautiful, Michelle, that you are instilling that in your daughters at a young age, because I think about my childhood self and I think about my young adult self and all of the ways in which I engaged in people pleasing, impression management, code switching, all of those things to make other people around me feel comfortable. Mm-hmm. And I look at younger generations and I think about my youngest niece or one of my youngest nieces and how she shows up, how she is. And there are moments where I have to say, I check myself, and because I want to, then I find myself wanting to go into trying to rein in her behavior. And then I have to, before I actually engage in that, I have to stop myself and I have to say, no, I'm going to let her express herself. And then there are certain, you know, just human decency, respect things that maybe I'll teach her. But in general, allowing her to be who she is will have her growing up to be a young woman with all of the confidence in the world. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I worked mostly with middle school and high school students for like most of my career. And I loved middle school because they haven't quite learned how to hide yet. Right. And you can see the switch from like late eighth grade to early ninth grade. There's a switch where before a kid is like, yeah, here's 17 things that happened today in varying degrees of intimacy with no filter. And then when they get to ninth grade, they're like, and now I have a carefully curated playlist of things that I am going to tell you about. So I feel like these, you know, my kids are all, well, they're five and under. And I feel like this is my best chance to see who they really are before they know that they have to like hide it or whatever. And the more I can encourage like who you are, you can always bring that to me. You can always bring that to your dad. You can always ask questions. I want that to be so ingrained that when they get to that like hiding ninth grade year that they're like, yeah, they might hide that from everyone else. But my hope, I'm sure it will still happen, is that like they still feel like, yeah, I can bring these questions to my mom because I've always been able to do that.
I hope that for you too.
How can we do that for ourselves well? Because I think that we need the tools to be able to do that in a meaningful way. So I'm interested to hear how you do it well, what your recommendations would be for doing it well for those of us that may have not had that reinforcement very early on.
Yeah. So I'll just quickly say I'm a licensed psychologist and college professor. And so
thanks for answering because we would have never got there.
So of course. And then the other piece is that I am the other half of the Cultivating Her Space podcast, and you all had my co-host on last week. And so I would say my role as a psychologist influences a lot of how I show up, in that I try to be intentional, particularly with my nieces, to create space for them to be themselves, to ask whatever questions they have. And I started that when they were really little. So my oldest niece is almost 21. And then her youngest sister is almost 7. But with each of them, and they have two more sisters, and then I have a whole bunch of other nieces and godchildren.
Awesome.
I know it's so many. And I, you know, what I try to do is give them space to express themselves, right? To say whatever it is that's on their mind. And then also the space to ask questions and without judging them. So where everyone else in their life might respond to them with judgment or with, well, I don't think you should do it that way. You should do it this way. I try to come in and give them that space to really say whatever it is that's on their mind and then help them kind of think through what's a healthy response for them. What's a healthy way for them to engage? And I see it, you know, with my oldest niece, I see where she is in a space where the fruits of my labor.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's paying off.
Yes, it's paying off. So like those seeds that I sowed from the very beginning with her of I am someone that's safe that you can come to. I see it now, like even when she was going through, so she had that phase of like, Michelle, that you talked about, like that high school phase, right? Of not sharing as much or really curating what she would share.
Yeah.
But I see now that as she's emerging into young adulthood, she's come back around to sharing even more, right? To sharing more of like how she did when she was a lot younger. Because I was intentional about, I'm always here. Like, even when she was in high school, I would say, you know, you can call me. Like, just even though she wouldn't want to, just constantly letting her know, I'm here. No judgments. I'm here.
That has to be such an absolutely incredible gift for your niece. And one that you give, I think, in the podcast also so generously. I love that the podcast is called Cultivate.
Yeah.
Like cultivate her space, because there is this picture, you know, cultivate is mostly when I think about it, I'm thinking about like gardening, right? And that is seasonal. Like it happens every year. It is never complete. There is always growth and rest and the trade-off of those two things. And so intentionally, I love that is part of your, you know, kind of your brand, if you will, that you are cultivating a space. You're creating, not just in the podcast, but also in your work, that you have created a space that is for growth, that is a spot where someone could find the best soil to grow in, and also a place to rest, because that is how soil works. I'm not a very good gardener, so that's my my very limited understanding of gardening.
Tenille Clark would be like, what are you talking about, Michelle?
Yes. Tenille is like, stop it. You can't garden in my garden. Sorry, Tenille.
Yeah. Dr. Dub, what do you think?
You know, well, Michelle, I do want to say I appreciate how you spoke so beautifully about the name of our podcast, right? Because interestingly enough, that wasn't the original name. So originally when we started out,
this is a Hectic Podcast exclusive.
Yeah, with, first take, hot take here. And
so our first year, we were called Her Space Podcast, right? And the Her is healing, empowerment, and resilience. And we went to trademark the name. And then we realized, oh, no, we can't, because other people are already using the name. And so we were like, but no, we still need to trademark. So we need to adapt the name. And so we went back and forth on trying to find the right word to put in front of Her Space. And when we came to cultivating, it was similar to what you explained, Michelle, that like we were constantly growing and feeding ourselves in terms of this journey of healing and empowerment that we're on, right? And so then we added that name, and then it's so beautiful how it just fits and it flows and it's very on brand for what we do.
I do want to talk about the Her letters, because I feel like they are, as we've been talking about, intentionality, like why healing, empowerment, and resilience. Yes.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yes. So where is the history in those three words?
So those three words come from when we were starting the podcast, Terry and I wanted to, our goal was to, as our tagline says, create a safe space where Black women can just be. And what we know in terms of how Black women interact with one another, and then subsequently how other women join in, is when Black women get together, we talk about our healing, right? We talk about the things that are going on with us. When you have that good squad, when you have those folks that you really connect with, we talk about the things that are going on in our life, and those women who are surrounding you are uplifting you. They're empowering you, right? And then the healing comes in, and then you can walk away feeling resilient, right? And so what we wanted to create with the podcast was a space where we could come together and we could have these conversations about wellness, right? Our mental health and other things that might be going on in our lives, and talk about topics that people might not always want to openly discuss, right? But we know that it's happening. So having a conversation about fibroids, right? Having a conversation about our finances, having a conversation about polyamory, right? Like talking about the things that we know we're experiencing, but we might not be wanting to put out there. And so making it comfortable for us to come together to have these dialogues, because we, again, like I said, we know what happens when Black women get together. Mm-hmm. We find ways to uplift one another and find that healing. And so why not talk about the things that might be uncomfortable but are necessary for us to talk about?
Hi, friends. Hope you are enjoying the conversation so far. I know I absolutely am. The Hectic Podcast is brought to you by hecticapp.com, the only freelancer productivity workspace with all the tools you'll need to get into control and stay on top of all your freelance work in one place. I'm talking real Kanban-style project management, time tracking, proposals, contracts, invoices, and online payments, a client CRM, and educational content to help you start, manage, and grow your freelancing business. Start today for free at gethecticapp.com/podcast. That's gethecticapp.com/podcast.
Like I mentioned earlier, I did a lot of work with middle school and high school students, and I love that you are really diving in on super important things like relationships and mental health with college students. Yes. That is such a wild and important time. I'm curious how that came about. Like, how did you decide, like, yeah, this is a place and these are people that I love?
You know, what's fascinating is that this is not where I saw myself. It's not. And, you know, and I think that's also became part of the journey, right? Is seeing where you're supposed to be, where you're guided into being, right? Because I think that all of us, or most of us, have plans for ourselves, right? Mm-hmm. And like, oh, this is what I want to be when I grow up. And for most of us, that's not how life works out.
So real.
And so, but then getting to a space of, okay, no, this, what I'm doing now, this is the calling. This is where I'm supposed to be doing. And so to answer the question, how I got into the space of working with college students. So all through grad school, I would tell my faculty, my advisors, I want to have a private practice. Like, I'm getting this degree and I'm hanging out my shingle and I'm going to have a private practice. And that is not how life works out. Life was not that straight and easy. It just wasn't. And so when I was finishing my postdoctoral fellowship, didn't have a job. Like, and I was scared. Like, what do you mean I don't have a job? Like, I don't come from a wealthy family. I can't just go back home and be like, mom, take care of me. Like, that's not an option. And so my internship and postdoctoral fellowship were in college counseling centers. And I found myself enjoying the work with college students. And because I feel like working with college students or working with like middle schoolers and high schoolers, it keeps you young and youthful. And so I was enjoying that work. And then I'm like, but I need a job. I don't know what I'm going to do. And a faculty position opened up at a university. And I was like, well, I guess I'm going to apply. I mean, I need a job, so I'm going to apply. I said I was never going to teach, but, you know, the universe has a way of making you do the things you said you would never do.
Yes.
And so when I started, then I started teaching at a university, and I was like, oh, I think I actually enjoy this. Like, college students are so insightful and lacking knowledge at the same time.
Yes, it's beautiful.
It is so beautiful to see. And they're imaginative and creative, and but then also in this beautiful space of I'm moving out of being under the influence of my family, and now I have the space to think for myself. What do I think? Right. So as we were as we've been talking about this self-mastery and this journey, and the college age is that is a beautiful space. And I just feel really privileged and honored to work with students in this space in their life.
That is so true. College is such a unique time of life. I think of my own college experience and how much I learned and changed and grew and messed up. I'm wondering, as we kind of talked earlier, you know, we are trying to build into the people around us this idea that we can be a safe space for a college student or a young adult, even if they're not at college, who hasn't experienced that safe space. How do you teach that as you kind of get introduced to someone in that stage of life?
So I try to model that in the therapy space, right? So when they come in and they're coming to me, and therapy is a very vulnerable place to be. And so, you know, I try to make sure that I model that safety so that it's, and then helping them to identify where they can get that in other spaces, right? So, okay, so we just had this really difficult conversation. How did that feel? What are the things that came up for you? How did it, what qualities do you need in someone that you're talking to feel safe? So to help them to start to identify those things and then to say, okay, so well, let's look at your support system. Let's look at the people who are around you. Is there anyone in your circle who meets that need? Is there anyone in your circle who you feel safe enough to talk to? And if not, how do you have that conversation to let them know that this is what you need? Right? I usually tell students all the time, communication is key. And the phrase that I use in my class, closed mouths don't get fed. So if you don't tell me what you need, I cannot be expected to help you.
But if you don't have a real good relationship with what you need or what you want or an idea, like it's just all uncomfortable. Like, because I was thinking about Terry in my conversation last week, and she was talking about how in grad school, which, you know, very much relates, Michelle, to the question that was positioned here of like, okay, you're a college age student, et cetera. You're in, you know, grad school. She figured that in somewhat during emerging adulthood. If you don't figure that out through emerging adulthood, is it harder to lean into the vulnerability that's required to go, what do I want? What do I need? Because from my experience, it was, because it was just like, you know, it got more callous, if you will, of like, well, I've made it this far. Yeah. I don't need that soft crap, you know, or whatever that may be, you know, like however you may label that. What have you done with that? Like, what would you say to that as an inquiry?
So what I would say is, yes, it is harder. It is. It is. Because if we think about who we are as adults, that means that you're looking at 30 plus years of doing things one particular way. That's hard to change, right? And so what I tell folks is keep with it, right? Keep at it. That even though you may have made this breakthrough, right? And you can now identify and easily communicate, because that's the second part, right? So you can identify what the need is, but then did you communicate the need? And so now that you can do that, also understand that it's a continual process and that there are going to be instances where you might forget to step back and identify what you need, or you might forget to communicate what you need. It's an ongoing process. Just because you got it right that one time doesn't mean that you're going to do it that same way every single time.
Right.
There are points where it may feel like a regression. So I think about, you know, our parents, right? And our family, siblings, and everyone that we maybe grew up with. So like my sisters know like 10-year-old Dominique. And so there are things where they know how to push those buttons, right?
Yeah.
And so it might be easier for me to regress into 10-year-old Dominique when I'm with my sisters who know exactly what buttons to push, whether they're being intentional in doing it or not. And so it's a continual process, and it's about extending yourself some grace and compassion when you don't live up to the growth that you've reached.
So whether you're earlier on the journey, whether you're in the middle of the journey, whether you're later in the journey, but you're somewhere on this journey of self-mastery, why you feel that's important to hear lots of different voices? Because I think a lot of times we can go, oh my gosh, like, I feel like I've heard this before. I feel like I've heard this before. I feel like I've heard this before. But why it's important to hear from so many different people is because of like that, okay, I hear a little bit different in this story. I hear a little bit different in this story. But what that means for you, specifically around this journey piece, that we have to be on this journey. The work is never done. Why that's so important and meaningful and valuable from your point of view and your professional opinion.
Yeah, I think it's important to have a variety of perspectives on the same topic because, like you mentioned, it allows you space to really see it holistically and to see what aligns best with you, right? Like I think about like in mental health, you could have 5 different mental health professionals engaged in conversation with one person. And each one of us may come up with a different diagnosis for what is happening with that person. Some of that is because of who each of us as an individual professional bring to the table. So how I interact with the client is not going to be the same way that you would, Daryl, or that you would, Michelle. And so then that means that that client is going to give each of us different bits of the same story. And so it's important to have a variety of perspectives so that you can really see a bigger, more holistic picture. And it helps you to make the decision that's most in aligned with your values and who you want to be as an individual.
Yeah, because there's already so many prescriptions out there. And I think that like there is some choice, like, and this is just from my story, is because I consider myself like a curator of knowledge. And I think that a lot of times we get so absolute or so idealistic and we go, I read this one book and this is the ultimate truth, right? I read the, you know, whatever guide to happiness or whatever guide, and then it doesn't fit. And then now you're now questioning yourself in a negative way.
Yeah.
And it's why I think it's why it's so important. Like we talk about diversity and we talk about diversity, of course, in the most obvious ways, right? That's diversity in race. It's diversity in gender. However, diversity in cultural perspective and narrative and background, like all of those components are really important as well. And while I love all of the advancement, the things that we're talking about in diversity, I think we're missing that one component of like mental diversity, thought diversity, as a global conversation. I think it's really important and I think it's missed.
I would agree with you on that. I think that it's important to not have everyone in your circle share the exact same opinion as you, right? And to not take it personal when they don't, because everyone is coming to the same table with different backgrounds. Even if there are certain pieces of our identities that are the same, we still are coming in with different backgrounds that influence how we're thinking and what we feel, what resonates with us more. And so it's, you know, as you're thinking about your own self journey, it truly is, when I think about it, there's so many different seasons and stages in life that get influenced by so many different people. Like I think about for myself, like I'm almost 40, and I think about my 10-year-old self, right? I think about high school Dom and college Dom and then grad school and then as an early career professional. And then I guess technically now I'm mid-career. And what all of that has looked like across those, how I have evolved over all of those different stages.
Oh, I love that you just said like how you evolved over all the different stages. Cause I appreciate you recognizing the evolution through those stages. Cause I think that like, if you don't process it, you get to your 40s or you get to your 50s and then just life happens to you. And I think a lot of us, myself included, get real comfortable with just letting life happen to us. And I think that there's a place for that, right? Like there's a place for surrender. Yeah. I 100% believe that there's a place with surrender. I call it intentional surrender. Because like, if you just are like, I let go, I'm going to let it all happen. Like that is a choice to not make a choice and to not ultimately have, you know, control of the way that you show up in life, right? Because I think that's important, right? You can't control the outcome, but you can control the way in which you show up to life. And so I think that it's really important that you've identified, one, the stages, one, how you transition from each stage, how you reflect on each stage. And I'm wondering, you know, as you talk about the stages, I instantly went to, do you think you could tell us a little bit about those stages and what you learned through the stages? Like, you know, you don't have to go deep and like, well, then there was this and there's this, but if you had to, pull insights or themes out of 20s, 30s, now approaching 40s, and what you're thinking about how you will own your 40s in a very intentional way, what that looks like for you. Because I think a lot of us don't spend time in those transitions of like, okay, I am no longer 30 anymore. And that's what this means. I am no longer 40 anymore. That's what this means. I am no longer 20 anymore. Because I think we don't pay attention to those transitions. And we're just like, we're in it. I'm in it. I'm still 20, although I'm 40. And I'm still making those decisions. And I don't know why I'm making those decisions. But I'm going to stop ranting at this point because I really want to hear your answer to, like, you know, how you've transitioned well, but then also some of the things that you've learned from each of those stages.
Yeah, that's a great question. I love that. I think each stage had something different happening in my life, which that's also affected how I showed up or how I responded to certain things. So I think, you know, as a child, I grew up in a single parent household, the oldest of five. And so the childhood Dom was one who was parentified, right? And so I was having to help take care of my younger siblings. And that's intense for a kid to have to go through. But what it also showed me was about responsibility and discipline. And then, you know, get to a stage, get to college, and it's, oh, wait, how navigating independence and freedom and not having to necessarily the opportunity to be selfish and not necessarily having to think about taking care of siblings back home and what that meant for me, right, as an individual. As I got older and then had conversations with my siblings, there became a conversation around what did that mean for them, right? How my transition through various life stages mm-hmm. impacted those around me. And, you know, and then as I moved into adulthood, it became about chasing my career and working on being a mental health professional. And so, and now I'm in a space where I feel comfortable where I am in my career so that I can guide those coming up behind me but still looking to those who have gone before me. And but then also being comfortable with who I am in this moment, where when I was early in my career, I might have thought I was comfortable, but I wasn't really, right? It was, oh, I'm trying to get to, or maybe I'm comparing myself to what other folks are doing, right? And but now being in this space of, well, no, I really, let me reflect on, I have accomplished a lot. I am doing a lot currently, right? And what, and allowing myself that space to embrace that, to celebrate that. And then also thinking about how where I am now impacts those around me. Mm. And so because I've been intentional about doing work on myself and constantly trying to evolve, that means that the people around me benefit from that.
I love the way you walked through that. I think I tend to like, okay, that was the old, you know, that was 10-year-old Michelle. That was my 30s. And I tend to like, okay, I'm going to leave that all behind. But I love the way that you have so intentionally said, and here, this is what I learned from that season. These are the things I took with me from that season. And there's obviously, you know, some things you leave behind for good reason.
Yes.
And then have used that as a way to so positively influence the people around you. I feel like there's a bit of a theme as we're talking through your story, and I see it in my own life too. So maybe that's why I notice it in yours, which is like cultivating her space wasn't the first name, but you end up having to go back to the drawing board, and then you end up with something more beautiful, right? And then the same for your career, you know, you pursue this practice and then that's not what happens. And so you kind of take stock of what's around you and you end up with something that you really love. And I think that is such a powerful tool in our tool belt. I want to give you space to say, you know, where someone could find you and interact with you online if they wanted to connect with you. What's the best place to do that?
So I will say, unlike my co-host, I am not that great at social media. Terry is a master at social media, and in her podcasting masterclass, she can talk to you all about that. But I would say if you want, so I am on Instagram at the.doctor.dom. But I also, interestingly enough, did eventually come around and have a private practice. So my private practice is drdominiquebroussard.com. So that's drdominiquebroussard.com. And that's usually the easiest way to find me and connect with me.
Awesome. And we'll link that lastly, as well in the show notes too.
The Cultivating Her Space podcast. You can find us wherever you listen to podcasts.
Yes. And it is an absolutely brilliant listen. So definitely listen to it. Daryl likes to do this thing where he makes sure that that we give our guest kind of the last word. It's like, it feels like a lot of pressure at the end to be like, all right, now close us out. But I would love to give you space just to say, I don't know, anything that you would like, that you feel like maybe we didn't cover, or just something that you like to say, to kind of close us out.
Yeah, I can share with you my three favorite phrases that help guide me on my journey. One I mentioned earlier, closed mouths don't get fed.
Yes, I wrote that down. I love that so much. Amazing.
Two, focus on what you can control. Hmm. And three, trust the process.
Hmm. So good. And with that, my friends, peace.